This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 25th of August, 2021. We had a session yesterday in the U.S. and overnight where we saw this attempt at a further extension, slightly beaten back, but we can't really call this a consolidation yet, just a sideways day. I think the market clearly overextended a bit after that vicious rally. I think the point we want to make today, and we can look at it on slide two and notice some of the patterns in recent months, or these slides. We've noted this before, how we've seen some slides towards the 50, 55-day moving average, and each of those being picked up very quickly. And there's a lot of talk out there that a lot of this is linked to the options market. So we may have the derivatives tail proverbially wagging the dog of the market, if you will, as these S&P options that are monthly options that expire the third Friday of the month. Sort of the time frame when that comes into play, there's a huge, when the market starts moving, there's huge offsetting hedges and hedge unwinds that need to happen, depending on whether you're long calls or short calls and long puts. And then so far, we've seen buying of the dip on three occasions, right around the 50 to 55 day moving average. On this occasion, this month, it was scooped up before that. But just to emphasize, we try to make this call actually near the lows, to be fair, that there are concerns around this market. There's nothing in this recent rally that has us thinking otherwise. Still very concerned about this market. This is not a sign of market health if we have this derivatives trading in a rather poor liquidity environment driving things. So obviously with very little going on from yesterday's session, Peter, I don't know if you want to add to that in terms of the overall comments on this market. I know you have some perspectives on also the lack of drawdown, something we've also remarked lightly on at times.
Sure, but if we quickly just go through the theme basket, we've just seen a remarkable reversal. So what have happened for the most of this month, we have had the MSCI World, the broad benchmark for world equities, being rallying pretty hard and with a lot of our theme baskets trailing that performance. But then, over the past week or so, we've seen a reversal of that. And you saw it yesterday as well. The MSCI World was barely up. And on the flip side, all the worst performers this year, or most of the worst performing themes this year, bubble stocks, travel stocks, e-commerce, China's consumer and technology stocks, gaming, were all rallying pretty hard yesterday. So you could say that sentiment has been lifted quite significantly. We haven't touched a lot of, on this in the podcast, but over the past two days, there's been a lot of communication coming out of the People's Bank of China, saying that they're going to prop up the market. They also had an intervention in the repo market in today's session. And so I think there are increasingly signs now that China feels like they are in a better position to probably crank up both fiscal and especially monetary stimulus for their economy. And I think maybe the confidence have come on the back of China being very successfully curbing the recent pockets of COVID-19 cases. And also, all you mentioned this morning to me, that the Ningbo port, the third busiest port in the world, is now getting back to speed and operating at a more full capacity. So I think that's good news out of China. And you're correct, John, on slide three, I just want to highlight that we, ever since the great financial crisis, we have had a new market structure, and you pointed towards the derivative things. Today, I want to focus on the drawdown. So right now, we haven't experienced a 5% or more drawdown for now 211 trading days. That's the second longest rally since the great financial crisis, as you can see on slide three on the chart to the right. And what I think that means is that whenever you have these long stretches of very few and small pullbacks in the market, it takes out risk aversiveness of the market. So risk aversion is low right now. What it typically leads to is a buildup of more aggressive positioning, more leverage. People are getting blind to risk. And then typically we have a snap, just like we had in 2018 with the Wallmageddon. I'm not saying we're going to get something like that at 50% drop in 2 days. That's not what I'm saying. But a more healthy correction of maybe, let's say, 7-10%. I don't know what the catalyst is, but I think it could come. And because of this extended rally, the positioning and the unwound of these positions could be quite dramatic in a short period of time.
Yeah, and I think actually that it reemphasizes the point I made on the S&P and the potential that these options and potential so-called yield enhancement strategies where people are shorting volatility, that's where some of the snap could come in if people have leverage that suddenly becomes explosive in gamma terms. If you're familiar with the options, that's when suddenly the delta is moving very, very quickly because of large price moves. It becomes a sort of a self-aggravating cycle, and it could create very, very sharp moves in the short term, even with or without necessarily fundamental developments that are particularly alarming. So keep that in mind. We still have, a risk level that's not quite clear from what we're seeing on the surface of market action. Let's get over to, I can briefly cover, very briefly cover the FX market, where we're seeing largely the reflection of this recent rally in the yen and the dollar remaining quite strong. I put the Urian chart up on slide 4. It's quite interesting to see this modest rally here. And I think we're going to be heavy there as long as yields are quite low. That 200-day moving average coming into play, as you can see on the upside, and a major, major level down in the 127 area, as I put on that Urian chart on the left there. And nothing to note in the trends, as we've seen a counter trend move to what was prevailing before. And we're all wondering if we're going to get a proper trend reversal. The commodities rally coming back on board, potentially with a renewed or new positive sentiment towards China, et cetera. And then the dollar and yen rolling back over, or what are we going to get? And I think maybe the Jackson Hole, post-Jackson Hole, once we get that event risk out of the way, will be key for establishing whether we're reversing or resuming that former trend. But over to fixed income and treasuries. We've had a bit of a discussion here this morning, I'll tell you. And first, we need to note what happened yesterday with the two-year auction, where let's be honest, the yield moves across the board, very, very modest, but it was in the auction result itself and signs of massive demand at the front end of the U.S. yield curve. So take us through that, and then we're going to just discuss this setup going into the debt ceiling.
Yes, John, I think to put it shortly, yesterday we have seen one of the best 2 years notes auctions in U.S. Treasury history. Basically, the demand was so high, especially from indirect bidders, that was the highest since 2009. The reason for such high demand can be explained by two factors. One is that the two-year notes were offering 2 basis points over the previous auction high yield. And the second explanation is that we have still a lot of liquidity, which we find, for example, in the reverse repurchase facility, and that continues to compress the front part of the yield curve.
Yeah, and then we have the five-year auction up today, and you've noted before the seven-year auction on Thursday, and this is one of the less popular maturities at the auction. So if there is some kind of mismatch in demand, that would be, I guess, the one to watch for. Let's go to this Treasury general account process. We've talked about this, of course, before. The drawdown is more or less complete. They've drawn all the way down to $300 billion. You can see the chart on slide 6 that you created, Althea, puts it back into the range it was pre-pandemic, that huge buildup and via issuance to cover emergencies during the pandemic and its wake. I guess some of the, apparently some of the drawdown is linked to this whole debt ceiling cycle, which is coming up here, and the resolution of that. And depending on how protracted, if I understand this correctly, how protracted that debt ceiling sort of brinksmanship happens and is extended, the more vicious the whipback could be in the Treasury needing to issue massive amounts of debt, just as we're talking about the Fed tapering. Do I have that right? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, John, I think that the biggest risk for the bond market is that we should start to talk about quantitative tightening, because as you just said, that the Treasury has been drawing down their Treasury general accounts from 1.8 trillion to 300 billion in order to meet with the requirements of the debt ceiling. But the problem we have is that experts and also Bloomberg is saying that if the debt ceiling is not extended, then the U.S. Treasuries will default at the beginning of November. So basically, what happens here is that by the beginning of November, the Treasury will need to issue bonds in order to raise money and refinance existing debt. So the Treasury General Account would need to rise from 300 billion to 800 billion. And what we will see, basically, it's a quantitative tightening because we will have all of a sudden an incredible high issuance of U.S. Treasuries.
All right. It's going to be an interesting process to watch. And it just shows that, you know, despite the very quiet levels on these yields, that something, an issue like this suddenly could set things on edge as we head into the later part of the fall. Let's get over to commodities. We've seen a very big snapback here, Ola, in crude oil, and as well, I noticed in copper overnight. So it looks like at least the copper side, I would expect to some degree, is linked to that resurgence of sentiment towards China. What are we expecting here for next steps in the commodities market?
Well, welcome to the roller coaster, which I think the slide here with the oil market on slide 7 highlights shows quite clearly. We've had a week here with the risk off hitting the across the markets with the Delta virus being the I suppose the lead instigator, and then also some worries about the potential dollar movements should the FOMC announce Powell announce the tapering to commence, but. We retraced half the losses of the sell-off we had here since July. So that means we're probably back to neutral now. There's just so many different forces right now pulling in opposite directions. The Delta is still a threat, not so much in China, but elsewhere. We're still seeing it spreading. There's already now talk about a new variant, which apparently is even worse than the Delta. The first case has been found in Denmark. They've also been found in the US and elsewhere. We had a fire early in the week on a rig outside Mexico, which has taken some like 400,000 barrels a day out of the equation. That's basically how the amount that OPEC Plus lifted production or increased production by this month. So that has evened that one out. So yeah, just plenty of news hitting the wires. I think overall, longer term, the oil market, industrial metals, they will still do very well. But for now, I think oil has reached a plateau, potentially 70 to 80. But I think that's probably as far as we can get. As well, we still have uncertainties on the demand side. And China has improved, and that's also helping to lift copper. And I think that it was quite an aggressive correction, but still, from a longer term perspective, quite shallow. Does indicate that the underlying demand in these industrial metals, they're still there. And just finally, a small insert. Today, we got the weekly EIA report. API last night reported smaller than expected draws in both crude oil and gasoline, and that probably also just helped take the sting out of the rally yesterday.
Okay, and then on staying on the energy front to a degree, Peter, you took a look at the major wind turbine companies yesterday and noting the remarkable divergence in Vestas, of course, a Danish company, relative to some of the other players in the industry. Take us through that and your thoughts on the industry.
Yeah, today Saxo is launching a topic called the future of energy. And a couple of weeks ago, Steen and I had the absolute honor of being able to interview the CEO of Vestas, Henrik Andersen, and we had a great talk about, you know, the green transformation, changing weather patterns, what's happening in the world, and where we're going within the wind turbine industry. I really hope you'll enjoy that interview. It'll be available for Saxo clients sometime today, and then next week we'll open up to the broader public. And as a warm up for this interview, I looked into the wind turbine industry. It's a very narrow industry. Partly also one of the reasons why you could long-term be quite positive on as a shareholder, because there are basically four companies, and these four companies will dominate this industry over the next two or three decades, I assume. So you have the renewables energy division under General Electric. So that's part of this massive industrial conglomerate. You can't trade it as a pure exposure. Then you have Vestas and Siemens Gamesa, which is a merger back from April 2017. So that's the two major players here in Europe and arguably the two biggest players in the world. And then you have Goldwyn, which is the Chinese domestic champion. And that company, of course, will be massive in the, at least in China, but potentially also in the Asia region and competing with the three others from the developed world. And I looked at the different metrics. I won't talk too much because I put in the link. You can go and watch it on analysis.saxo. Find my name, you can find the analysis. But I just want to highlight that Vestas is truly in the group that we call green quality. I've been talking a little bit about this topic in the earlier part of the year, that after that massive rally in green transformation stocks broadly last year, I think we are in a new period where we have to filter out what I call green speculative or green junk. And Vestas is high quality. It has a very high EBITDA margin spread, positive spread to Siemens Gamesa. So it's a much more profitable business. They have grown revenue, as you can see as well here on slide 8, much more dramatically over the past couple of years compared to Siemens Gamesa. And then that has been rewarded in the market over the past 18 months with the EV to sales ratio just exploding for Vestas relative to its peers. And the question I'm asking in the article is whether maybe the evaluation is too good to be true, or it's too aggressive. And I mean, Vestas really have to deliver. And I will say as a closing remark, John, that Siemens Gamesa is having a lead on offshore wind turbines. They have already almost 5 billion euros in revenue in the previous fiscal year, whereas Vestas were only at 1.4 billion. So, and we all know that offshore wind turbines is going to be the future in this industry. So Vestas needs to get up to speed on that one.
All right. And then on the earnings front, I don't know to what degree we have these pretty heavy Chinese calendar, to what degree that's going to feed into the risk or whatever, the market's assessment, I guess, of this potential for a comeback in Chinese equities, a lot of which potentially driven by obviously driven by foreign flows out of the market on this new regulatory push and focus from China.
Yeah, that's a good lead-in, John. The big Chinese companies like PetroChina, which is reporting today, China Life Insurance, not really the big ones that move sentiment. They just massive dinosaurs in this market. But a company like Xiaomi, they haven't reported yet as I went into the studio to do this podcast, but that's the equivalent of Apple in China. And I literally listened to Cathie Woods from ARK Invest, her interview on Bloomberg yesterday, and because she had to defend her decision to go back into JD.com, which came out with this really strong earnings report on Monday. And she echoed some of the remarks I've been made as well, that is, in this new environment, and especially towards October next year with Xi Jinping most likely at the Party Congress to be the new leader for China indefinitely, you have to reorient your Chinese exposure towards companies that you think will benefit or the government really like. And Xiaomi is producing smartphones. They don't do anything, in quotation, anything evil against its population, or they're not harvesting privacy data, and they're not using all these algorithms. They're not doing gaming, which is sucking potentially productivity away from young people and maybe also elderly people. So that, and JD.com is just a retailer. Xiaomi is a smartphone producer. You can look at the semiconductors in China. I've mentioned Answer Sports, which is there, and Nike, for quite some time. So go have a look on that. And then just very quickly, we have Salesforce and Snowflake, two tech companies in the US reporting today after the close.
Yeah, those are big ones. All right. And then on the macro calendar, so that five-year auction we mentioned, this is on slide 10. Pretty quiet calendar watching the oil inventory data we have just after we're finished wrapping up here. We have the German IFO Business Climate Survey. And tomorrow is the start of the Fed Jackson Hole Symposium, but it's that Friday speech. Maybe perhaps as well with the final University of Michigan sentiment. That was one of the most sour data points I can recall in recent memory. I don't know if this is just a popular concern around the new Delta variant in the US or what it is, but we need to watch those sentiment data. We're seeing a lot of generally decelerating data in places in the US, and then the PCE inflation data on Friday as well. So we'll see how things proceed, and we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.